Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Anyway, we move on. There's a tentative conversation going on again about congestion charges for motorists, and it's an issue that certainly gets people going. Merrin Lynch from the ESRI during the week saying that even people in EVs need to basically start paying for their road use. So to talk about where we're at with the future of car use, I'm joined now by Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor of the Sunday Independent. Hi, Geraldine.
Good morning, Brendan.
Where are you on congestion charges?
I'm not a big fan of congestion charges myself. I think they're a fairly blunt instrument. They take obviously a higher proportion of income from poor people. They're also how they work in many areas is that you pay a congestion charge once you enter the zone, and if you stay there all day or you stay there for 5 minutes, you still pay the same amount of money. So I think there's better ways of doing it. But I think the big picture with congestion charges is they have to be one part of an integrated approach to improving public transport. So it's not just a case that if you introduced congestion charges in the morning, you would no doubt reduce the amount of cars on the road because lots of people would be put off. But you have to have alternatives. We currently don't have the capacity for everybody to take public transport. And I think more than anything else as well, we have an issue around safety in terms of public transport. We know from the report that the TII did 3 years ago when they interviewed women that more than half of the women interviewed didn't feel safe using public transport at night. A third of them didn't feel safe at any time and had big fears around public safety or public transport and safety. So, you know, I think it's not just a case of let's get people out of their cars. Okay. We need to look that they do have proper alternatives.
Yeah, okay. But I suppose we do accept that we need to get motoring taxes and road taxes from somewhere, like if we're going to start winding them down on petrol and diesel cars.
Yeah, there's going to be a huge gap there, and how do we fill it? And yeah, I mean, electric cars, if we're going to move towards every car on the road at some stage being electric, they have to pay. So yeah, I mean, there's a whole rethink there on how do we get motorists to pay. And I think per road pricing is where we're going, that, you know, you pay for the journey, the type of vehicle you have, the type of route you're taking, the hour of the day and all of that. And the technology is there to do that.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big IT job. But we're, okay. I'm kind of trying to keep up with what's going on with the EVs, right? Just one little straw in the wind I noticed is that, like, a few taxi drivers now have said to me recently that they regret getting EVs. They got great incentives to get them, but they're saying that with the price of electricity and everything now, that basically the saving isn't there for them anymore.
Yeah, there's huge incentives to get taxi drivers into EVs because it makes more sense. They're on the road much more than the rest of us. So, you know, if we need to get them. I think there's two big problems at the moment. I think we see fuel prices coming down. I think they're at the lowest at the moment since about September 2021. And electricity prices are high, particularly if you're depending on the public charging network, which a lot of taxi drivers would be. There's been two price increases in the last 12 months. So I think that, you know, the cost of ownership is narrowing between petrol and diesel and running an electric car, and that's going to become an issue. And then, of course, the grants are being reduced from July.
Yeah.
So trying to that sort of incentive about, apart from the environment, the running cost, that argument is kind of, you know, it's lessening in terms of its strength really at the moment.
See, I wonder as well, are we going to at this kind of half-cocked in the sense that we've made this decision, okay, we need to change to electric vehicles, right? And a lot of what you see around Dublin, certainly, are these big, fairly big tanks of EVs. And you just think, well, that's not saving the environment at all. Like, they're using loads of power. It might be different power, but is it not that we should be using smaller cars? Should EVs not, particularly in cities, like?
Oh, no, absolutely. But I think you need to go back to, like, SUVs have become the big cash cow for car companies for the last 10, 12 years. So they sold this idea to car buyers. You know, you could buy these cars, you could scale mountains, cross rivers, not that you ever had to, but you could do these things. Consumers in turn then demanded more of them. And it's been this constant now. And the majority of cars, I think about like at least 60 to 70% of cars sold in the country are SUVs. Therefore, when car makers came to make electric cars and make them attractive to consumers, they made electric SUVs first. So as a result, we have a whole host of electric SUVs. But what we're finding now is the design of electric cars is quite different than your petrol and diesel cars. So they need to be more aerodynamic and they need to be lighter. And so we're seeing a totally new shape coming into cars to get the best that you can out of the battery and the longer range. So you can take the exact same battery and stick it into a saloon or stick it into an SUV and you'll you'll get much better range in the saloon. And car makers know that now. And so car designers are responding to that. And I think we're going to see over the next, particularly the next 2, 3, 4 years, a totally different shape of car. And we're going to move away from these heavy and big SUVs. But I think consumers need to be educated as well that they don't need 500 and 600 kilometres of range. They don't go those journeys that often. So I think there's an education process as well for when people are buying them, not to be opting for the bigger car with the bigger battery. You don't need them often.
Is there a generation on the way though of like little city cars, which you would think is kind of the answer, certainly in urban areas, like, because aren't most journeys are one or two people in the car, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're short.
Absolutely. And I think what we need to look at is that sort of model of mobility. Now, some people are, Citroën have a little Citroën Ami. It's not available in Ireland. It's a little two-seater.
It looks amazing. Yeah. And it's so small. The two seats have to be staggered, don't they? Because they can't have them flush. It's so small.
It's brilliant as well. And it looks exactly the same in the front as it does in the back, except for the lights. So like, it's the simplicity of design that's just amazing. But I think where we need to look for inspiration is if you look at the likes of India. Right. India sell very few cars. Ownership is really, really small in comparison to the actual population. And it's down to two reasons. Number one, they're really expensive. But secondly, they just simply do not have the space for four wheels. So 80% of their vehicles are two and three wheelers. Mm. And I actually think we have this very, you know, kind of superiority complex when we look at India and we think, you know, the Americans and the Europeans think we need to bring our way of living to them. Actually, we need to learn from them. And I think they're a view of the future. Because what is the prediction? By 2050, 80% of people will live in cities. We're going to be India. We're going to be those really congested cities. Yeah. So that's where we need to be moving towards.
And did I not see as well that they have electrified a big load of the tuk-tuk or rickshaw kind of fleet as well, and that it's made a huge difference in a lot of the cities?
It's made a massive difference because air pollution is a huge issue in India, and that's why these are perfect. But I think, you know, we look at those probably like, oh, they'd never work on European roads, you know, they wouldn't conform to safety and whatever. Yeah. But we could take that idea and produce European style, you know, cars around that and mobility. And I think really long term, that's what we have to be looking towards. Whether car makers will fill that gap or whether we'll have new entrants into the market to produce these two wheelers and three wheelers will be interesting. But definitely, I mean, if we're going to get to a stage in 2050 where most people live in a city, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, remember when the railways came in, right? And the one of the things, the Pony Express obviously was out of business overnight. Mm. And it was like, well, the answer is not get faster ponies, you know. The answer is you have to reframe everything completely. But is there a sense in which we're stuck with that cars are the answer? And again, back to cities, that it's like, well, let's make a different kind of car. Whereas in fact, it's, well, get out of the car and get on an e-scooter or an e-bike, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think if we look at two and three wheelers, we're actually moving away from the car and we're looking at other modes of transport rather long term. And I think that's what we are doing. But I think we have a huge issue across Europe with car ownership. We can reduce car usage through, you know, reducing our journeys. But I don't see any great measures to reduce car ownership. And one of the big issues is our housing, particularly in Ireland. We have decades of bad planning and poor policy, which has led people to live further and further from where they actually want to live, where they want to work. And therefore, they're becoming more car dependent. We have towns that lie empty, yet we build, you know, retail outlets that are only accessible by car 2 and 3 kilometres outside of towns. So we need a radical rethink of how we use our urban spaces and our housing and everything if we're going to actually move to having less cars rather than, you know, making less journeys.
Okay, so yeah, God, it's funny, it all comes back to housing in the end. Listen, in terms of that kind of culture of car ownership and our attachment to cars, so I joined this thing recently, Yuko, do you know it? And there are other ones available, Go Car and so on. But the idea of it is kind of amazing. It's like Spotify for it. So Yuko, I think, is Toyota, right? And they're, no, look, I'm lucky in that there is a car usually near enough to me. They're in particular spots around the place. But basically that it's like a car as a thing. You don't own a car, but you have the use of one when you want it.
I think
it seemed to me like a viable future.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea. It's particularly good for people who have a second car and probably don't need it that often. Remember, cars sit on average for about 23 hours a day parked in our driveways, you know, just consuming resources, really. So, yeah, I think for second cars, definitely they should look at that. I'm banging the drum about this for years about car sharing in workplaces where employers could actually, if they had three car spaces outside the door, say, right, if four employees come together in work in the morning, you can have one of those. And I know nobody wants to share with Marion accounts, but, you know, there's an idea there of just just taking three cars off the road.
To it?
Oh, completely. I tweeted this idea about 3 days ago, and the amount of I had given up that there was any hope for the Irish driver, the amount of people who said, I never would never car share, would never even consider it. But I do think we need to be more creative about how we get around the place.
So people want their own space.
Yeah, and I understand that.
To be their worst selves for an hour before they get into work, I suppose. Yeah. On the broader scheme of things, is the surge in electric car buying still going on, or was that a kind of was that the early adopters who were going to do it, and is it going to be harder now to get the next cohort to do it?
No, I think there's a huge demand for electric cars. There's less supply. I think the unfortunate thing at the moment is there isn't a good supply in the second-hand market, so because very few people are in the market to buy a new car. So we need to grow that second-hand market, but unfortunately we can't unless we sell more new cars, because we used to have a position where we could import cars from the UK. Since Brexit, that's just not financially viable for a lot of people. So I think that's the problem. But as I said, I think the rising cost of electricity is making people think twice. I think the grants being reduced, even though it's only 1,500, is sending the wrong message to people. And we do know when prices go up, demand goes down. So I would worry about that grant, because I would reckon as well it's going to be reduced further in January.
Okay. Someone here asking about sustainable synthetic fuels for existing internal combustion engines. Is that going to happen?
This is the 2035 ban that came in Europe, allowed a provision for cars that run on synthetic fuels. The thing about it is they're very expensive to make, they're highly inefficient, and there's nobody making them in any great scale at the moment. So I don't see them as being an option. I think they're going to be very niche.
Okay, so EVs are probably the next wave.
Yeah, hydrogen cars as well. I wouldn't write them off. Okay. So, yeah.
So you see, that people are going to go then, oh, well, then I'll wait and see how this pans out. Is there an element to that as well? Like that?
I think there always is. But look, there's grants there at the moment for EVs. If you're thinking of changing your car, don't rule out buying an EV because of the electricity costs at the moment. Look at the total cost of ownership. They have great ranges. You know, they're not suitable just for the urban areas. They're suitable for all drivers.
Okay, it's not an EV issue, says someone else. We've had SUVs on city school runs long before electric vehicles arrived. Mm-hmm. Some long overdue education for these mums and dads. Yeah, I was making the point, mm-hmm. Extra, that you would have thought, given that we were trying to change to a more sustainable way, that we would have made the cars smaller. Oh God, Brendan, first of all, we shouldn't be flying abroad for holidays. Now we're to be penalised for travelling around the old country. Get that down to the West Cork we've just been waxing on about. Cycle lanes now take up a disproportionate amount of road space, yet they do not contribute in any way to the tax burden, says Pauline. Joe says, I live 2 minute walk from Shankill Dart station. I work in Crumlin. I have to get a Dart to Blackrock, a bus to Crumlin, 1.5 hours to get there, 30 minutes by car, but public transport not an option. Moira in Cork uses Park and Ride every day. She loves it. There should be more Park and Ride.
Absolutely,
on the
yeah.
outskirts of every town, because there was a kind of a flurry of it for a while, but then it seemed like it.
But even basic things like, Brendan, there's very little parking at train stations. Like if they just expanded that, they'd give that option to people. So there's simple things we could do that would give people more options. But that thing about the, you know, taking three buses or two journeys, that's a big problem, because even if you took the cars off the road and public transport went faster, if it's gone halfway around the world to where you're going and it's still too long, people are not going to use it.
Okay. Well, listen, we sorted all that out anyway. Simple. So, Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor of the Sunday Independent, thank you very much.